Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portstein with you on a Thursday afternoon. I am here in Central Ohio. The Blue Jackets are in, what is that, Elmont, New York, for a game tonight against the New York Islanders. Regrettably not on the road for reasons. Thanks for being with us today. We got a lot to talk about. The Blue Jackets. Boy, do they make news in the worst possible ways. Rarely good, never boring, I've always said. I guess the lead from yesterday is that Eric Robinson has been traded to the Buffalo Sabres for a conditional seventh-round draft pick. The Sabres clearly want fourth-line help. They've got some injuries. They still feel like they're playing for this season. I mean, if you look at the Eastern Conference standings, you got to do a little bit of math, but it doesn't take you long to figure out. It's really Buffalo and Columbus at the bottom. I mean, technically right now, Ottawa has the fewest points, 20. But Columbus is 1 point ahead, Buffalo 2 points ahead. They've played seven more and six more games, respectively. The Blue Jackets have played seven more games than Ottawa. So, a matter of time before Ottawa's schedule picks up. The Blue Jackets, Robinson had 12 goals last year, which is a pretty good number for a fourth line slash penalty killer. But the Blue Jackets, listen, they have been trying to make a trade since the summertime. And, you know, each of these teams' cap woes have lessened a little bit as we've gotten about a third of the way into the season. But there are also things that happen over the course of the season. And from the in Buffalo's position, they needed help. Now, they weren't willing to give up much for it. They didn't. It's a conditional seventh-round pick, not this year, but in 2025. And keep an eye on this. If Robinson plays 45 of the Sabres' remaining 56 games, the Blue Jackets get a seventh-rounder in 2 years. That's the value we're talking. And part of this is because Robinson is a fairly expensive fourth-line guy for a lot of teams. $1.2 million. He's a UFA after this season. I think the Blue Jackets, of course, were ready to move on. It's pretty obvious. There's been a lot of games this year where Robinson was in the minors, others where he was up here but scratched. Texier has played in that role. This allows Matthew Olivier to be more of a regular. And I think you can also look on the Blue Jackets farm and say, listen, push comes to shove, Carson Meyer can come up and play, the local kid. If you're looking in the future much at all, I think the team is very excited about what James Malatesta might be. He's a player that's, you just had the sense he was going to have a really good year with Cleveland, and he's off and running down there and playing really well first-year pro. He's started to score some goals as well. But he's a tough, really competitive kid. He looks to be a third or fourth liner in the NHL. Other stuff going on with the Blue Jackets. Well, the losses, the late losses, and I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of those. I've got a theory on those that I'll get to here in a second. But what happens in these lost seasons is it seems like the injuries aren't too far behind. And yesterday, the Blue Jackets, really Tuesday, the Blue Jackets got hit hard with some injuries. They've been fairly healthy this year, but now, you know, that's catching up to him. Boakvist out 4 weeks with a shoulder strain. He had been on the top pair with Zach Werenski. Elvis Merzlikins expected to miss a week with an illness. I checked to see if that's COVID. strange that you might know it's already going to be a week with an illness. Not necessarily COVID, but it takes goalies longer to get back into the flow of things. And then Cole Sillinger remains day-to-day with an upper body injury. The Blue Jackets have recalled Blankenberg, Bemstrom, Greaves. That's a defenseman forward goalie from Cleveland. You know where I stand on Blankenberg. I think he should have been here from day one. I like that guy. I want that guy in the lineup. Sometimes it takes injuries to get there. I'm not sure who's drawing in tonight. I assume Spencer Martin will get the start with Elvis on the sidelines, but Jet Greaves will be the backup. Greaves having a very good year in Cleveland. So the theory now. And by the way, if you want to ask a question, certainly you can do it via text or you can step to the stage. We've got a couple text questions in there already. We'll start getting to those in a second. Step on stage too. If I'll draw you in, we can have a chat. You can ask me the question directly. So here's my theory. The two things that really irritate ardent Blue Jackets fans watching this team are their propensity to blow late leads. They did it again, Gonzo style, against the Kings on Tuesday. 3-0 lead going into the third period, and the lead's gone in 6.5 minutes. And the game is gone on the first shift of overtime. 4-3 losers. Really hard. Really hard to blow a 3-0 lead in the NHL. I don't care what anybody tells you. You have to be part of it. And so just watching all of these, it is amazing the utter lack of competitive confidence that these guys have, that this team as a whole has. And now in these, you know, it's a learning lesson and we're a young team and yada, yada. Okay, fine. I believe that. I think the bigger problem is that the veterans on this team, there are a few of them with moxie and guts. Boone Jenner jumps to mind. Eric Goodbranson jumps to mind. Sean Corrali jumps to mind. Now, Boone is the top six player on this team. But the other high-end, skilled difference makers that you need to make plays in your own zone. You think of skill as being scoring, but it's more than that. It's getting quickly out of your zone. That takes skill. It takes vision. I think the same thing that befuddles them with leads, competitive confidence, is the same thing that keeps them from excelling on the power play. They have the ability to have at least an average power play, for sure. Any power play that starts with Werenski, Line A and Gaudreau should be somehow able to put together a decent core. I'm not saying you're going to be firing 38% leading the league, but there should damn sure be some highlights and some consistency. There's none of that. And I think the power play is like getting called on in class. If you know the answer, great. If you've got skill and you can score and you like having the puck, and you can play up on your toes because you're not just a skilled player. You're also a badass. You're confident. You love those 2 minutes. Give us the puck. If you don't have that competitive confidence, if you don't know the answer, you don't want those 2 minutes. Just let them go by without anything bad happening. And I feel like that's how this team has tried to defend its leads too. Just don't let anything bad happen. Not let's go do something good. And I put it on the veteran players more than I put it on them being a young team. I noticed Werenski late Tuesday trying to make a difference, almost trying too hard to make a difference. And part of that may be because everybody else on the ice just went into a freaking cocoon, into a fetal position. He tried to carry the puck 3 zones up, turned it over. Not a big deal. It's way out of it at the other end of the ice, but still trying to do things by himself. I think Danforth keeps playing. I see that with him. I don't notice Johnny Gaudreau in these moments, and that's not how it should be. I don't notice Patrick Laine. Now, he didn't play Tuesday, so nobody noticed him. But where are the guys? Who are the leaders, and when do they arrive in those big moments? Look what happened when the Blue Jackets played in Boston. Brad Marchand, competitive confidence to the extreme. You may hate Brad Marchand. Damn, do you need Brad Marchand on this team? That they don't have that guy on this team. They've got some They have some Ferraris on this team. What I've always said about Ferraris, great when the weather's perfect. You can't take them out in the snow. You'd be an idiot to take them out in the snow. And I think that's Laine and Gaudreau. And those are the guys at the top of your roster. For me, the move by Jarmo Kekalainen yesterday was fine. I mean, I don't mind them moving Eric Robinson out, especially if he's not going to come back. But don't stop there. I think this team, I'm not saying rebuild and strip it all back down, because you've already started to do that 3 years ago. But Laine and Gaudreau, I don't think you can have both of those guys at the top. Maybe you can have one of them at the top if you change the dynamic otherwise. It's just not working. They don't play well together. I don't think it's because they don't want to. I think they've tried to. They just don't make magic together when they're on the ice. Gaudreau thinks that's because they both want the puck. That seems as reasonable an excuse to me as any. But they've tried them on the power play together. They've tried them on opposite wings together. And it is oil and water. It does not work. And some are still in the camp of keep trying it. I don't like them on the ice together. I don't know anybody who does, because they haven't done anything together. And I don't like them at the top of the roster. I don't think this is the way to build a winning team in the NHL. So if I'm Jarmo Kekalainen, I'm trying to be very, very aggressive and at the top of my roster. When I say at the top, I mean money-wise, not performance-wise, because those guys have been middle of the road to below average. They're not coming anywhere close to carrying their weight in Columbus this year. They've been totally outshone by players who are just getting here to the NHL and just getting started. And that's just, you can't have that. Let's get to the text questions. Again, if you want to step on the stage, you certainly can. I'll get to you when we can. We're going to blow through some text here first. Thanks again for joining us. That was maybe the longest intro I've ever done, so apologize if I rambled on too long. Joe S. says, what are the CBJ going to do with the goaltending situation? Carry three goalies, make a trade, take a risk, and put Martin Tarasov on waivers with Elvis on IR, it seems they're delaying the inevitable. So, Joe, I got into this in the Blue Jackets Sunday gathering. According to Jarmo Kekalainen, when Tarasov has to come back from Cleveland, and that will either be at the longest, that will be Sunday. That's the longest they can keep him there, unless they change his conditioning assignment from a long-term injury to a traditional conditioning assignment, and then he could stay a bit longer. But at some point, it's going to be Martin Tarasov and Merzlikins. And according to Jarmo, they will keep three goalies for the short term. And that's because, the reason given for that is they want to get Tarasov up and running and make sure that he can play without getting hurt again, because they don't want to lose Martin on waivers and then lose Tarasov to yet another injury. So they're going to carry three for a while. I don't know how they're going to get enough work. I think you could also look at that Robinson trade yesterday as being beneficial to the Blue Jackets, knowing that the three goalies are coming, are likely anyways. So that's what they would do. And quick to Martin here. I've heard some people wonder if Martin has trade value given the way that he's played this year. Not big trade value, or we're talking Eric Robinson trade value, I'm sure. The answer to that is he may, but no, he cannot be traded. The Blue Jackets claimed him on waivers. Thus, they have to keep him through this season before they could trade him. And that's to keep teams from using the waiver wire to claim a player ahead of another team and then trade them to him. They don't want it to work that way. So the Blue Jackets have Martin. If they want to trade him, I mean, so here's the way they can trade him, but just listen to the explanation and you'll realize, oh, well, then why would you trade him? Martin would have to go back on waivers first to the teams that also claimed him when the Blue Jackets got him. So it's done in inverse order of the standings. So the Blue Jackets had first dibs. They don't know, and it's not for public knowledge, which teams behind them also put in a claim for Martin. It's possible that none did. But if any teams did, then those teams would get first dibs on Martin going back on waivers. And if none of those teams, assuming there are any, claim him, then he is exposed on waivers to the entire NHL. So if you're a team looking for goaltending help and you think, yes, Spencer Martin can help us, well, you're not going to trade for – you're not going to not claim him on waivers and then trade for him. So, no, the Blue Jackets are highly, highly unlikely to trade him because of how the process works. Let's see. Jacob B. says, do you think that the lack of fan support inside Nationwide Arena is a symptom of the team's record? Oh, boy. And what do you think can be done? Almost every game has opposing team chants that are louder, and people seem very hesitant to join in on CBJ chants, even when we have the lead. Well, Jacob, I think the team has a lot of responsibility in this. I do. I think the fan support, honestly, and I don't sit down among the people, so I don't hear all the chants necessarily. We're up above, so we kind of hover above in the press box. I am not going to put anything on the Blue Jackets fans or their support. The fact that this team has the support it does after 23 seasons, many of them like this, too many of them like this, not all of them like this, but too many of them like this. The fact that they've got 15,000 showing up on a Tuesday night is impressive, and I'll not besmirch them. Jonathan S. says, would it be possible for the Blue Jackets to forfeit the rest of their games? I can't handle this anymore. I mean, there's a joke there to be made. Jonathan, maybe just take the rest of the season off. Or you know what, check in weekly. I'll forgive you for that. Give you a week, a one-time pass. I get it. I get it. I mean, these late leads is just, good God. At times, it feels inevitable.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Dale B. says, I have a hard time believing Jarmo will be the GM at the draft, given how the season is going and the message ownership sent to start a season. Why not rip the Band-Aid off now? It at least sends the message up and down the organization and to the fans that this is unacceptable. Dale B., I think you're speaking for many with that comment and question. I would say this. I think ownership here has a decision to make in the spring. And that is, if you're going to make a move on your GM, this is sort of the question like, when do you fire a scout or when do you change scouts? Because if you remember one year, I think the draft was in Pittsburgh. And on the way back from Pittsburgh, we're driving on the way back, the Blue Jackets fired almost their entire scouting staff. And the question then, and other teams have done it that way as well, why did you, if these aren't the right people, why did you just let them draft? And if you're the owner of a team that is thinking about a GM change, and you do it in the summertime or after the season, then I think a fair question is, why was that person who you have deemed no longer worthy of being in that position, why were they allowed to run the trade deadline, which is a huge moment, a huge deadline for any team? Yes, I think it's only fair for people to wonder what Jarmo's tenure will be here. He's been here. It'll be 11 years in February that he's been here. results fall on different people. They just change the coach. So see where it goes. But I think it's a fair question this spring to wonder if ownership here is ready to make a move. Let's be clear with this too. John Davidson still, and it should be this way if he's the president of hockey operations. The ownership here puts a lot of trust in what John Davidson says. So it will be his call, I would suspect. And some people have wondered about John Davidson as well. I don't see John Davidson getting fired here in Columbus. I don't. I think John Davidson would be allowed to retire here before it ever came to that. And I'll just warn you, the dog is getting ready to say hello to everybody. Hang in there, Billy. Morgan, we're going to get to the stage queue in just a second. We've got Nick S. and Matthew B. waiting. So, Nick S., you'll go first. Hang on 1 second. First to Morgan B. Morgan B. says, I know not to read too much into scouts, blah, 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 but it seems like unless we do something jaw-dropping and trade Elvis, Martin is the odd man out. He said he has to clear waivers, can't trade him. So is that likely what happens when Terry finishes conditioning stint? Again, so when he does come up, Daniil Tarasov, Jarmo Kekalainen has said that the plan is to carry three goalies in the short term. I don't know if that's 2 weeks, if that's a month. It's hard to get guys work, especially when the Blue Jackets have played through their busy stretch of the season here already. They've played 7 more games than some other teams in this league. Pretty intense. And they've got 3 and 4. So, yeah. So they'll keep 3 and wait to see where it goes from there. Logan A. says, the frustrating thing in your comment about players not wanting those big shots is that KJ had that push in Cleveland and isn't getting a shot to even try in Columbus right now. Yeah, and I'll say this because I didn't get into this. It is another simmering topic. Adam Fantilli played 10 minutes and 11 seconds the other night. Ken Johnson played less than that. David Juracek played like 10 minutes and 25 seconds or something. Like, listen, I mean, you can either lose and not grow, or you can lose and grow. And who knows, if you give these guys more time, does Fantilli deserve to play that little? I don't see that in his game right now. I think he's one of your better centers. And if you want to manage his minutes, do what Anaheim's doing. Give him a night off now and then. I think he needs to play in these situations. I think he's one of the guys, frankly, that is not going to melt when the temperature gets turned up. Who was on the ice for the 3 goals in the early part of the third period the other night? Gaudreau was on for 2. Danforth was on for 2. Provorov was on for 2. Yeah. But I don't like losing a game like that and then also realizing that your young players played very, very little and were mostly sheltered in that game. Tough look. Let's go to the stage. Nick S., you are on Front and Nationwide. Nick, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Porcy. Appreciate you doing this every week. It's great to be able to check in. Hey, a couple things. I want to go back to your comment about that Dale was asking. You don't see any scenario that Davidson or Priest or the McConnells make a change at the general manager level prior to the end of the season?
No, I don't say that at all. As I said a couple minutes ago, I think there's a real question to ask this spring is if you let Jarmo handle the trade deadline. I mean, if you're going to fire the guy after the season, I'm not sure you let that guy go through your trade deadline. Now, you may be waiting on somebody. You may be waiting on a person to become available from another team. I would hope that a decision this big isn't made with, especially with this kind of a runway, isn't made rashly. In other words, you've thought about who's coming, who's going to be next. You've maybe even made hints and whispers around the league about where you're going next. And knowing that you can line somebody up, if they have to wait till the off season, then so be it. But I think if you're considering changing a general manager, then I think a real question to ask is, do you let them do the trade deadline too, as close as it is to the end of the season?
Appreciate that insight. The other maybe comment I would have, I understand your theory about Laine and Gaudreau, but the one missing piece that these two guys had in their prior teams and don't have in Columbus is we don't have a bona fide number one center. Jenner's doing a heck of a job, but he's not number one by any stretch of the imagination. Don't you think if we had a true number one center playing between these two guys, we would see a different outcome than what we're seeing today?
I think it is possible, but here's what I would say beyond that, not to split hairs, but if you had a bona fide, badass number one center, I think they're better, not just as players, but in terms of the team structure, because there's somebody else that carries the load of expectations. I think that's why Johnny was able to thrive in Calgary without being considered a leader there. He was certainly not an also-ran talent-wise. He's an incredible talent. But there were other guys on that team that stood up, that were the leaders of that team, that took young players under their arm, and Johnny performed in a very comfortable environment there. I think Laine was the same thing in Winnipeg. I'll take to Laine's credit, I think he has tried to be a leader here. I think he just may not have the makeup to do that. It's a very rare thing to do that in the pros. You have to be a real badass. And I don't know that they've got that at the top of the lineup. They could certainly use the talent next to them, for sure. But I think more than that, they could use the person that takes the heat off of them. And that would allow them to exist in a much less pressured environment, because I just don't think they're cut out for it. There it is.
I hear you. And then maybe the last thought I would like to get your impression on. Do you think Pascal is truly making all the decisions on what they're doing and how they're doing things, or do you think Yarmo is influencing what's being done? Because to your point, the young guys aren't getting the playing time. He did almost say to you the other night that there is a different structure that's going on. He probably wishes he pulled that comment back and probably not said it, because clearly they're playing a different game in the third period with a lead, and that's obviously not working, because all we do is play defense for 20 minutes. And
yeah,
you're bound to have goals scored against you under that thought process.
For sure. But in fairness to Pascal in this case, I think what he was saying is accurate. They're not changing their system, but no team, if we can just to draw a comparison with football, if you're up 21 points, you're not going to throw the ball on every down. You're still going to defend. And I think what he's saying is there are certain guidelines you go by when you have a 3-goal lead. You don't want people flying the zone ahead of the puck for scoring chances, because you've got a 3-goal lead. Stay fairly conservative. That doesn't mean don't even want the puck. I think there's no system where they don't want the puck. And I think that's what you're seeing. Just so many players who don't want the puck in that instance. When they get it, they can't wait to get rid of it because they're nervous as hell. And they have short memories. They remember what happened against Florida, against Carolina, against Boston, against the Rangers, against LA. They don't want the puck. So you don't, if you have a 3-goal lead, you're not going to forecheck with three guys below the goal line. But that's not the same as just not having the puck. And they don't have the puck. I mean, the first 7 minutes of that game against Los Angeles was incredible. I remember we were sitting in the press box wondering, are they even going to Zamboni this end of the ice? Because no one's using it. Like, the puck barely made it past the center ice line. And when it was, a guy from LA would go back and retrieve it, and boom, right back in the zone again. So, I mean, he acknowledged, Vincent did, that yes, some things change. It's like a pitcher with a 5-run lead. You're throwing strikes. Like, you're not picking corners. You're throwing strikes, putting the ball in play, but you're still trying to get people out. Those are just games within the games. But they're, from what he has said, what the players have said, they're not changing their style of play and their desire of how they want to play. They're just shading in a certain direction because of the realities of the game. Paul B., you are next on the Front and Nationwide podcast. Go ahead, sir. Hello, Paul. Paul once. Paul twice. And...
Hey, oh, you there?
Oh, in by the hair.
Sorry.
No worries. Go ahead, Paul.
Difficulties with the Bluetooth.
I got you.
No, I just kind of wanted to, I was going to expound a little bit on kind of your comments about these third period issues. And this might come off ignorant because I have never played hockey and I don't know much about it. I, you know, obviously love the team and all that. But this, just like I said, might come off a little ignorant. But I mean, the common theme, and I'm sure you guys are getting tired of asking this question and getting similar answers, but you guys, they keep saying, we've got to learn, they're learning how to win. They're learning how to win. And I don't understand what there is to learn. I get, because these guys have been playing their whole lives. They're playing the best players on their, from juniors all the way up to now, you know, on their teams. And likely they've been very, very successful teams that they were on. So they've been winning for a long, long time. I understand the NHL is a completely different animal than AHL or juniors, but what could possibly be there to learn? I mean, if you have a lead, I would imagine it's a matter of heart and grit to get the win done. You know, lock it down, let's go, yeah. Try harder, yeah. Push back harder. And I don't know that these guys have the stomach for it, because I was listening to the comments after the game. The only guy that really sounded like he cared was Matthew Olivier. He had some real disappointment in his voice, and the guy got a call at 6 o'clock to come play the game. You know, Johnny Gaudreau, he was like, yeah, it was a good team. You know, LA's a good team. I don't know what to tell you is what Johnny was sounded like. It was a little disheartening.
I didn't like Gaudreau after the game. I didn't like his comments after the game at all. I thought Werenski, I don't think you could listen to Werenski without realizing that he cares as well. I think that was clear in his words and in his voice. Yeah. I think to your point, and you hit it, like, you have to learn they have to learn from their group who are the guys that can be counted on in these situations. If you're Pascal Vincent, who the hell do you send out? Do you shorten your bench? Do you just keep rolling your bench? Who can handle this? And it's, to be clear, it really shouldn't be that big, but it's become a big thing here. Now, they need to learn how to perform under pressure, is what that is saying. And again, I think the power play relates to that too. That is the moment where everybody goes, oh, here's where the team should score. There's expectation again. And these guys just freaking melt with expectation. Look at the power play. Half the time, nobody wants the damn puck on the power play either, where you have other teams, Tampa Bay, Boston, these other teams with these great leaders that can't wait to get over the half wall. And get on the power play because they feel like they're going to score. And if they're not going to score, they're damn sure going to come close. And that's just, this is a weak group that just doesn't have that makeup in it yet. And you hope that some of the young players, I think Marchenko's come a noticeable step this year. I think Fantilli has that makeup. I think Voronkov looks pretty fearless. I think there's a lot of guys here who look the forecast to have that sort of attitude. That's why if I'm Pascal Vincent, I'm not shortening the bench and I'm not sitting my young players. I'm letting them get a taste of this. I'm giving them an opportunity to show the veteran players how to do it. And if they do, then they're keeping their jobs. They're gonna keep going out there. All right, let's go back to the chat room here if we could. Nick W. says, the defensive sag, how much is the system? How much is it the players? Nick, I think it's the players. I think it's entirely the players. Entirely the players. As we've said, this idea that no one's going to fly the zone for a breakaway, that's just how smart teams in the NHL play with the lead. The idea that you're going to dial down the forecheck so you don't get three guys caught below the circles, that's how smart teams play with the lead. That's not what's hurting them. It's their complete reluctance to stay on their toes and be aggressive and make plays. It's this feeling that something bad is going to happen. And with that in your head, something definitely is. Scott K says, they both have no move clauses. How easy will it be to move one? I assume you're talking Line A and Gaudreau. Line A, to my knowledge, is a 10-team, a 20-team no move is the way to say it. Or maybe a 21-team no move. I think there are 10 teams that he can approve a trade to. The Blue Jackets would have that list, and that's a trade they can just make. Johnny's got a complete no move. But we know what these things are. And, you know, if the club comes to the player and says, hey, are you willing to move your no move clause? Well, that's a message in itself, is it not? And you would see where things go from there. So it is an impediment. It gives the player certainly some control over where they're going. But it doesn't completely rule out the possibility of a trade. What rules out the possibility of a trade, unless the Blue Jackets take something back, is their salaries. Because where does the line form tell me for a $8.5 million player who gives you 50 games and 20 goals a year? That's what he's done in Columbus, a Line A. Martin L. says, Ports, two questions. What is your overall feedback on Vincent? How do the players like him? How much is this on him? And two, what could be gotten for Line A? Would Kuznetsov make sense? First question. Yeah, I mean, I think the players, the sense I've gotten is that the players with a voice in that room respect Pascal Vincent. I think there's an understanding from the smarter players in the room that he is trying to change the culture in Columbus. He's trying to hold everyone to account. And, you know, there's the thought that Gaudreau and Line A should never be scratched or benched. And then there's the other thought of, well, God, have you watched him play this year? Like, if you're the coach and you're trying to earn any modicum of respect within the room, you can't just scratch fourth line guys. You got to scratch the people who deserve it. And quite frankly, a lot of people have deserved it this year. I mean, those guys are, Line A and Gaudreau are about half of their career output, points-wise. Half. I mean, yeah. And Line A's heard and I believe out again tonight. What could be gotten for Line A? Well, listen, you're going to have to take something back. I don't think the Blue Jackets are interested in Kuznetsov. I don't. They need a center bad, but not that bad. They'd have to take a big contract back, or they'd have to buy out a contract for somebody else. It would take some work because the money is what it is. Nick W. says, has Yarmo suggested the team's top struggling veterans see a sports psychologist like he did with Bob? I have not heard that. And I'm trying to say, remember how that. I actually asked Yarmo the question about the sports psychologist. And instead of saying that Bob needs one, he sort of supported the idea of any player going to one if they want one. It was Bob that was mortally offended by that. Thoughts on Bemstrom requesting a trade? I am not aware of that. It is hilarious, though, if he has requested a trade. Good luck with that. I'd like $1 million, please. I would like somebody to want me too, though I have not performed at any level. Though I have never delivered in the National Hockey League, I would like someone in the National Hockey League to want me via trade. Yeah, go ahead. Philip A says, thanks for doing these, Porty. Hope you're feeling all right. A couple questions. Any updates on Sillinger? I'll just answer them as we go. Sillinger, day-to-day upper body injury. Do you know what the coaches are seeing in Juracek that is keeping his time on ice low? Well, we go back to the young players here. It's that in-betweenness that you can't have. Again, I don't mind if Juracek, I don't mind if he would have been sent to the American Hockey League at the start of the season to play another season. Too many defensemen in Columbus, don't have room for you, go grow, keep growing. I'd have no problem with that. The fact that he's brought here, the fact that he plays 10 games, his contract is now kicked in, he's told to get a place, you have made the decision to stick with him. So play him. Play him. Why not give him penalty kill time? Why not give him power play time? You are 8-14. Wait for me. You are 8-14-5. You have won 8 of your 27 games. You have been outscored by 15 goals. You are dead last again in the Metro. Get something out of this season. Please get something out of this season.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In a second, we're going to go back to the stage. We're going to get to Matthew B. So Matthew B, be ready. Sean M. says, I have never been a Browns fan, so I don't really know how to do this. Why are they uncompetitive year after year? It can't be the small market. The crew can put together a good team, and so can the Buckeyes. Oh, God. Please don't compare NHL to MLS or college football. What is it about the CBJ that makes it okay to be mediocre over and over? Well, it doesn't make it okay. You're pissed. So is everybody on this podcast. Don't assume that people think it's okay. And also, it's not fair to say that they've always been horseshit, because they haven't. They made the playoffs 4 years in a row from 2017 to 2020. They had 108 points, something like that. Point is, they've not always been as bad as they are right now. I can't let that fly. But it's only fair to wonder why this team can't really seem to figure it out. They had 108 points, by the way, in 2016-17. That was fourth in the East. Yeah, they're a mess right now. It feels to me like they're, and I've said this before, they are an animal in the middle of an evolutionary adaptation that you can't really see where this is going. And the limbs don't make sense. It's a weird-looking beast. So that's where they're at right now. Let's go to the stage. Matthew B., you are on Front of Nationwide. Please go ahead.
Hey, Porte, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
So I think, like, as a fan, and I know you've touched on this a lot, but I think one of the things that's most frustrating to me is the lack of vision with the young guys. And I think you've done a great job covering it so far this year. I mean, there was the entire Jurcik comment by Jarmo where he said, hey, like, we need to get this guy a place. And then a week later, sent him out of town.
Right.
I could go on and on about Kent Johnson. I think they've done a horrible job there. But after the Kings game, he was, Pascal was basically asked point blank about the ice times of those two, and Fantilli basically said they were playing well, and then basically limited it to a matchup, and then it's an NHL, or said it's the NHL. Then he went on the Morning Juice the next day, and they, like, asked him point blank about Fantilli's ice time, and he basically said, like, he's a great player. Like, we love where he's going to be. It's a matchup issue. Like, I guess I just don't really understand. Like, I've never played hockey, so, like, I don't really know. But do you think there's, like, major matchups that they should keep him away from at this point in the season? When, I mean, he should, I mean, let's just be honest here. They're at the bottom of the standings, like you said.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of not having him get at least 15 minutes of ice time a night?
Yeah, so I would say this. If there was a night where he played 12 minutes and it was against the Kings, otherwise he played. In some other games he's played, he's been in the 17-15 range, which is great. I think as a coach, your job with the really young players is first and foremost to make sure they're not ever overwhelmed. That was my problem with the Jurcik recall last year. If you remember, they called him up early, like 18-year-old kid. And they had an injury, so they brought him up. And I just remember thinking, I think I even asked, like, is he here because he's shown he's NHL ready, or do you just need a body? Because you have to take great care with these players. And he came up and played two games. And Jurcik, I mean, I still think he's going to be a hell of a player, but got totally exposed in that game. One of many players who did, by the way, but he himself personally was really exposed against the Devils before the Blue Jackets flew to Finland for their ass beating by the Colorado Avalanche. That was not a good look, and that's the kind of loss that can really rattle a young player. You can't have those. And the Kings down the middle, I mean, Kopitar could have been a Blue Jacket. Deneau, Dubois, that is as impressive a 1-2-3 as you're going to find in the NHL. So, you know, maybe the thought was that Kopitar couldn't hang, or that Fantilli couldn't hang. I'll allow, and I think this is, it, well, yeah, Vincent knows Fantilli and knows his game better than anyone speaking or listening on this podcast. I think that's fair to say. But I don't get any hint from Fantilli that he is fragile or on the verge of being overwhelmed and no longer progressing. I don't get that sense in the least. I think that kid has the makeup that you want. So even if he comes out of a game against the Kings frustrated, questioning, realizing where he's got to get better, that's okay too. And that's kind of what this year can be used for at this point. But I don't like him not playing against the Kings, because what do you learn from that? Would be my question. I think that's the rub here, is these guys, you know, I mean, you got to take your medicine if you're going to bring young kids in. I know you don't want to take too much as a team. You don't want them to take too much as individuals. But this is part of the process that has to be explored, even especially if you're back at the bottom of the standings again. We'll go back to the chat room. We got about 15 more minutes here. Lewis H says, I assume for you as a journalist, it is more enjoyable to cover a winning season and less to cover a losing season. Well, not necessarily, Lewis. However, can you think of your favorite losing season you've covered and your least favorite winning season to cover? Let me think about this. I mean, the one that jumps to mind for a favorite losing season was the first season in franchise history, when it was a team that played way above its head I don't know if you're old enough to remember the inaugural team, Lewis, but it was such a great time in the city. That team played with so much heart, played over its skis, played beyond what anybody thought they would. Super competitive, not very good. You knew they weren't going to be very good, but they had one of the better expansion teams ever at that point. I'll remind you, the system is much different today. So that was fun. And there were some other seasons in there that were just, I mean, goddamn oil spills. Especially the McLean years. Those were wild. The last couple of years there were just completely toxic. Infighting, backbiting, agendas. People were starting to sense the end and going out on their own rogue. There were some great stories back then to cover. And there have been some train wrecks. I think, what was the season, the second season under O'Neill, maybe, was just an absolute gong show. And, you know, it's not, no one's happy, but there are some incredible stories coming out of those. Like then Rick Nash, Nash requesting a trade. Holy hell. Jeff Carter partying in the private box in Philadelphia while his team's just getting absolutely murdered on the ice below. I mean, it was just crazy. So some of those are memorable. They'll all be in the book someday. Winning season, I mean, 16-17 was a hoot. That's the year they had the winning streak. That was when Torts was in his glory. Good team. Good guys. 19 was a blast because it was all so new. I just remember, and I said this when they beat Pittsburgh in a playoff game at home. Their first playoff win, of course, was on the road, but they beat Pittsburgh in a playoff game at home. And I just remember looking at people on the scoreboard. In Nationwide, looking at each other and not really sure how to act. Not because they didn't want to be inappropriate or whatever. They knew exactly what was going on. They just, it had seemed so long since they dreamed of having that they were beside themselves. And it was much the same in 2019. I'll never forget the noise in the building when they swept Tampa Bay. Incredible. What about John Tortorella's pregame speech before the series against Tampa, in Tampa. I mean, I just tapped my fingers across a keyboard for a living. I wanted to run through a wall in the underneath of the arena that day. Incredible speech. One of the all timers. So those are some memories that's of good seasons and bad seasons. But I have, you know, it's the old adage, and I'll say it again. There's no cheering in the press box. I am not a Blue Jackets fan. I'm not supposed to be a Blue Jackets fan. That doesn't mean you root against them, but you can't root for them. So you cover the stories, and you hope that they give you good ones to write. Eric S. says, who do you think is next to get shuffled along after Robinson? Plenty of candidates and guys reportedly requesting trades. Bempston, Chinnikov. Well, I think Chinnikov would have trade value, certainly more than Bemstrom would. And we'll see. I don't know that I don't think the Blue Jackets have any interest in trading Chinnikov. Yeah, see where that goes. But I think they're open on a lot of guys, or should be anyways. Jacob B, do you think CBJ are in the same place in the league if we had a lighter game schedule like Ottawa? Well, probably lower. Because they would have played fewer games, is my guess. With Boqvist's latest injury, does the team need to permanently retire number 27? Ryan Murray vibes. Yeah, good point. I feel for Boqvist because I really like him next to Werenski at times. And it occurs to me this season that, you know, they started with Peak next to Werenski, believe it or not. Then they went to Severson, then they went to Gabranson, and then they went to Juracek, And now they landed on Boakvist. And I thought it was as good as it'd been under Boakvist. I don't mind Boakvist's game, but boy, he does get hurt a lot. Scott T says, how is it not a huge indictment on Yarmo that he gave Peak a new 3-year, $8.25 million contract and he can't even crack the lineup without injuries? Well, yes, and it doesn't look great. And to me, that contract is another reason that allows you to keep Juracek in the American Hockey League this year. Again, too late now. You've kicked his contract in. You've told him he's staying. But you don't need to do that. It comes back to that. I think they thought they could win this year, and I think they thought. I think they thought they were further along. I think they misread that again. But yeah, it certainly, especially for a organization like the Blue Jackets, you don't want to sign a guy like that and then not have him play. Let's see. Joe S. says, has to be a franchise record for most line combinations this season. Hard to build chemistry when the lines are being changed every day. What has been our best line so far? Joe S., thank you for rewarding my work this year. That's right. I have kept a running total of the sadness that is CBJ line combinations. And now there will be new lines tonight. We know this based upon the injuries that are above us or before us. Whoa. But through game 27, so through Tuesday's game, and again, we're going to get new lines tonight. The Blue Jackets had started their games, and I can go over why I think this is the fairest way to do it, but they've started games with 43 different line combinations in 27 games. You ask, what has been our best line so far? Well, I can tell you which lines have been played together the most. I don't think any line's been best, has it? Maybe 42-7-24. I don't know. Is that? The line that's been played the most has been 13-38-86. So Gaudreau, Jenner, Marchenko. That line has skated 12 times together. No other line has skated more than 9 times, but 9 times has been Voronkov, Fantilli, Marchenko. Yes. And then 42-7-17. I think that was a pretty good line there. And that's been together at the start of 7 games. So tonight will be game 28. And my guess is they'll hit 46 different line combinations at the start of games through 28 games. Now, from the coach's perspective, that will stop the moment he starts to get some identity on lines and some cohesion and chemistry. And I think he started to see that a little bit between like game 20 and game 24. And then it all blew up again. But there was a stretch a week or so ago where play sort of solidified. Ryan D says, sorry for joining the show late, but who would you say is our MVP so far? Woo! Must there be one is the question. I think Elvis certainly gets you some notice as most improved player. I mean, it's got to be Boone Jenner, doesn't it? Doesn't it have to be 13 goals, 18 points? Boone needs to play probably 16 minutes a night because it was back, and he's at 1936 again, which tells you what's going on down the middle with this team. I would give it to Jenner, I think. And I don't know who you'd give it to next. Really no one else deserving. I think Jenner clearly is the guy. But if you're looking for second tier there, I think it would be Marchenko, Provorov, Maybe Voronkov, because of the way he's played lately, got here 2 weeks into the season, 3 weeks in. So, yeah, no problem. Good question, Ryan. I got what time for one more. This is from Christopher B. To round out your line combo math, could you calculate the total number of possible line combos? You know what, Christopher, that I may have to turn to my math experts, because that's not just how many different combinations of these 12 forwards can you get, but really it's like 15 or 16 forwards. Because you got guys coming in and out. There was one game where they dressed 11 forwards as well. So, or maybe the other answer is check back in March. And by then we'll know what the maximum number is, because the Blue Jackets by then surely will have hit it. Thanks everybody for tuning in. You've been listening to the Front Nationwide podcast. Thanks to David Cook for our fantastic intro music. David is a rock star with an incredible career. Columbus kid doing very well for himself on the East Coast. Danielle Lehman is our producer. Thanks to her as well. Thanks to everybody for checking in, for listening. Thanks for the great questions. We'll talk to you again next week. Take care.